Well, Blackburn Rovers sending their yearly finances to shareholders yesterday. A loss of £42.1 million for the year ending June 2014. Ian Battersby joins me to discuss it. When you see that number, it's a bigger number than it was last year. As a Rovers supporter, what goes through your mind?
It's quite staggering, to be honest with you, Andy. And I think that in the context of, you know, this sequence of horrific losses having been built up during a period when we've gone from halfway up the Premiership to halfway down the Championship. So, you know, it's a staggering number, but I don't think it comes as any surprise to anybody, bearing in mind the kind of activity and the kind of things that have been going on at the club during the 4 years of Venky's reign.
It's not been a good week, has it? A transfer embargo announced on Monday. The finances announced to shareholders yesterday. Rovers aren't going to be able to do much at all in terms of signing players for the foreseeable, are they?
No, and I think, you know, financial fair play has been waiting to hit us, to be quite honest. I don't think that's any surprise to anyone. But you're right, it's restrictive, and it's also a pretty big negative at a time when arguably we're getting a little bit of momentum back towards, you know, certainly on the playing side, in touch with the playoff positions, etc., etc. And I think that that now means that promotion this season, realistically, you know, is an absolute must.
Who's accountable? Who should we look at and say, well, who's not doing their job properly that this football club is losing over £40 million in the last 12 months?
Yeah, and 36 the year before, so cumulatively £80 million in 2 years. I think it's difficult to pinpoint any one person or any one particular activity that's culpable for this. I think that ultimately you've got to look back to the owners and the way that they've run the club, because all roads lead back to Poona. I think there's been such a sequence of horrific and mind-blowing decisions, really, and I think none more so than perhaps the appointment of Shebby. You know, and that was really, I think, a watershed. When we got relegated, we lost a lot of the high earners, we lost a lot of the arguably better players. But I think at that point we had a chance with the parish 4 years of parachutes to take stock of the situation, look at what we had, look at where we needed to be. And basically, whether it was panic or not, I don't know, but some of the contracts that were being handed out post-relegation, the term of those contracts, the value of those contracts was always going to be extremely difficult to unwind. And of course, you know, when you talk about 3 and 4 year contracts, it isn't going to be a 1 year hit on the loss side, particularly when you stack that up against the income. And I think another alarming statistic in the accounts is the match day receipts and the season ticket income, which is barely £3-4 million. You know, put that into context when we've talked this week about over £100,000 worth over £100,000 a week of players that aren't ever going to kick a ball for us. Put it into the context of a contract, a 4 year contract for Dixon Atuhu, a 4 year contract for Leon Best, the more recently announced 40 a week supposedly for Jordan, and those numbers are absolutely staggering against the amount of income that as a club we're generating.
The wage bill's well over £30 million a year. That's not sustainable at this level of football, is it?
Never in a million years, no. And I think that I think there will be an element of having seen financial fair play coming, Andy, and accepting that fate is going to fall upon us, and trying to bury quite a lot of bad news in this final set of accounts, almost to a point where I think in the coming year they will try to show that there's been an improvement, at least on the operational side. And I think there will be a reduction, but you know, again, when you look at the confines of FFP and what we're allowed to lose, you know, it leaves very, very little room for manoeuvre, and you can't see the embargo being lifted anytime soon.
You're from the financial world, you'll understand the numbers. For people who aren't, they're putting financial fair play and the annual accounts sort of under one bracket here. There is a difference to some degree, isn't there?
There is a difference. I think we all have a misgivings about financial fair play, how it's structured and how it impacts on teams. And going back as far as 2 years, when we saw the formative sort of plans for FFP coming in, we always had a problem with the fact that it seemed to be geared towards the size of the town where your club plays its football. I personally think that there should be no restriction on owners being able to put money into their club if it's their own capital, if it's their own, you know, permanent capital and equity coming into a club, then why shouldn't they be allowed to do it? I do think that the reason for FFP is very much around debt levels building up in clubs, and certainly from foreign owners who at the drop of a hat would walk away and leave a club 50, 60 million in the hole. So I think that's what it's there to do. But the notion of buying a car and then being told afterwards that you're not allowed to service it is ridiculous, quite frankly. However, and against all that backcloth, you know, you can't sustain those sort of losses. And you know, I think the problem is losses have been incurred. How are those losses being funded? It's either got to be out of the owner's pockets or it's being stacked up on the back of debt somewhere. And I think that's the problem, and that's the unknown as far as a lot of Rovers supporters are concerned.
The owners have taken a lot of punches in the last 4 years or so. They've sort of agreed to some of them that, yes, that they have made errors and they will be changing their ways, and to a degree they have done. But in this day and age now, as we reach 2015 in a couple of weeks' time, just how important are they to the whole future of Blackburn Rovers? Without the Rowe family, where is this club?
Yeah, well, I mean, all the noises that were being made in the early stages about how they were running the club and some of the decisions that were being taken, as a result of those decisions and a result of the kind of things that have happened and the losses that have been incurred, etc., and the contracts that are still in place here, we are absolutely at the mercy of those owners because, you know, I think it looks to me as though very regularly they're having to put £2 million a month into the club just to keep it ticking over. You know, you start talking about alternatives to Venky's, and I've heard one or two fans sort of saying time to go, etc. As much as that, you know, might be the sentiment from an organisational, a communication point of view, realistically, you know, then that isn't going to happen because the club is unsaleable. Who is going to come into a club that's losing money at the rate it's losing and inherit a load of contracts that are costing you £30 million a year before you actually start to operate the club? I mean, the wages side of the club, the payroll, is actually only one aspect of it. There is a whole club to run. There's a ground to maintain. There's an academy to maintain. There's Brock Hall to maintain. And there's the actual logistics and costs of moving teams to various to fulfil various fixtures. So it's a very costly operation. You know, so it is an unbuyable state. Who is going to walk through the door and say, right, OK, even if we pay a pound for the club, we're walking into a situation that's going to take 30-odd million a year for the next couple of years at least to fund the playing contracts that are left behind. So it's not a very attractive proposition at all from that point of view.
So in terms of being able to buy a player, Blackburn Rovers surely, in the state they're in, won't be able to in the summer either, will they?
It's not looking that way. You know, it's going to need some astute wheeling and dealing. And I think that, again, as we mentioned earlier in the week, Andy, when we spoke by telephone on air, it's mind-blowing, really, that, you know, an offer of reputedly £12 million for Jordan Rhodes was turned away, particularly knowing what's coming. And it's not just the £12 million capital that might come in to reduce the debt, and we don't know who owes what out of that transfer fee, but the fact that it's a saving of £2 million a year. And again, you know, it's been reported that the owners have told Gary Bowyer that he doesn't need to sell players. Factually, that might well be absolutely the case. But ultimately, we're not in a position where we can drive up our income, which is fairly minimal. So, you know, the logical conclusion to all of that is that the cost base has to come down, and particularly recognising that financial fair play, our four years of parachute money, is actually about to come to an end fairly shortly. So that makes the position a whole lot worse too.
In any other business, if a consortium own 10 businesses and one is experiencing what it is, a lot of the time people would walk away, wouldn't they? Is football just different than any other?
Well, I think the whole... Yeah, it is. It's I think the emotion that attaches to football clubs, etc., but you go back to the point of why Venky's actually acquired the club in the first place. It didn't really make an awful lot of sense for a conglomerate 6,000 miles away to buy a football club in a northwest mill town in England. And having said that, it was in the Premiership at the time, and maybe, as Madam said to Ian Currie and myself when we were out there, it was about leveraging the brand, etc., etc. But very quickly that became brand damage. And 2-3 years down the line, and continually having to write cheques to fund the operation, this was starting to be hurting them, I would imagine. If not financially, then certainly, you know, emotionally, it's nonsense.
Would you still like more communication with the owners? Are you in any interest at all now yourself, Ian Currie, to have any sort of dialogue with the owners, or have you pretty much given up on that one?
Well, ultimately, you know, the future, the safety of Blackburn Rovers as a football club and the heritage, etc., etc., we all want to make sure that remains intact. And that's not just down to people like me and Ian Currie, it's down to people like the Rovers Trust, it's down to people like the 100 Club, all manner of different sections of fans and people within the Blackburn and surrounding communities. So at base level, yes, very, 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 very interested in making sure that that continues. However, we've got to a point where 4 years down the track, there's so much water gone under the bridge, there's so many bad decisions being made. Yes, there's a case for saying that we've started to correct that. It doesn't look like it in the accounts, but I think operationally we'll see some moves in the right direction over the next 12 months. But, you know, it's so much water has gone under the bridge, Andy, that it's very, very difficult to actually position where that might start and where it might continue towards, really.
And just a final one. Do you have a great deal of sympathy for the manager, who had a high-pressure job before this news and before Monday, that getting Blackburn Rovers into the Premier League would solve various issues, possibly not all of them, but now I think he's under no illusion at all that Blackburn Rovers have to be looking at finishing in a top six minimum.
Yeah, they do, and I think it was ever thus, to be quite honest, Andy. I think that the minute you come down and you the structure of your club is geared towards Premiership football, it's a hell of a blow to have to sit in the Championship for any period of time. So logically, you know, we do need to get back up there. I mean, it will be very opinion will be very divided on this. At the end of the day, you could turn around and say footballers and managers are well paid for the jobs that they do, and therefore the pressures that go with it are what they are. But it certainly doesn't make Gary's job any easier when he's having to work within these sort of restrictions. And you know, I'm sure he's been communicated with, and he's seen it come in as well as the board. You know, and we have to adapt around that. But I think the real fear here is that something's got to give somewhere. If we're going to conform, something has to happen, and that might well be the loss of some of the better and more valuable players in the squad. It's also quite interesting that financial fair play parameters allow for losses of up to £39 million in 3 years going forward, which is a real issue, really, because, you know, that is hardly a measure of success to lose 39 million quid in 3 years in any level or certainly any business. So, you know, if that becomes a benchmark, then that's a problem in itself as well.
Just on the players that we talked about, £100,000 going out a week on players who are not going to play for the club again, under this management, you've got to say, Paul Robinson, Bradley Orr, Leon Best are three who you would say are probably big hitters in that respect. It's going to be difficult to get them out of here. And from their perspective, why should they go?
Well, exactly. I mean, having been awarded or rewarded, in inverted commas, with such a lucrative contract over such an extended term, as footballers sort of in the later stages of their careers, let's say, they aren't going to walk away from it. And I suspect that that's one of the revealing numbers in the accounts, that payments to players who have left the club you know, continues to be a big number. So they aren't going to give that up lightly. And the prospect is that, you know, any kind of exit for those boys is going to end up with a cheque being written in their favour, or at least payment to them in some way, shape or form over the life of the remaining contracts.
We have seen a number of teams in the Football League go down the route of administration. That's never been mentioned here at Blackburn Rovers, but it will certainly enter the thoughts of some supporters. What's your take on it?
I think it's not something that Venky's would accept very easily. I think from all the sort of things that we've seen so far, I mean, why would you commit over £100 million to something and then immediately write it off? But at some point, logic dictates that tap is going to have to be turned off. Administration is not the solution that I think some fans may feel it might be. This sort of notion of a 10-point deduction and start again, either further down the league that we're already in or worse than that, relegated. But that brings with it a whole host of problems because the debts are football debts, so it is not an easy solution. And anybody that's trying to pick the club up from administration would have to deal individually with the players' contracts that exist at that time. So logically, you're then going to be in a position where you're sitting down with Jordan Rhodes, etc., etc., and saying, look, you know, would you accept, you know, X minus a large proportion of X to exit the club? And you have to have that negotiation with each and every one of the creditors, of which the players are one. You're also writing off all the value of any assets that you think you might have on the balance sheet. So it's an extremely messy, I wouldn't even go so far as to say it's a solution. It would be an unfortunate event that happened if it did indeed happen. But I think that supporters who are sort of saying, well, you know, administration is around the corner, is far from a straightforward solution.